Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey, it's Bree. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. We've not spoke on the phone before.
Nope. Just Facebook.
I know, right? It's kind of cool. It's like you get an idea of who you're talking to.
Well, hopefully I make sense, I guess. I don't know.
You make sense to me.
Well, I'm kind of abrasive. I'm not the nice one. Logan's the nice one.
They say that you need a dynamic like that, though. Like, they say that's the best relationship.
He keeps me in line, for sure.
He'll come back with something and said somebody wanted him to do something, and it, I don't know, and it's for free, and I am just, I unload. I feel so sorry for him sometimes.
Good for you. No, somebody has to do that. Like, what? I saw a meme where it said something about a relationship where a man, he said, I need a woman to be able to tell him that that's not how I ordered my potatoes.
That's right.
Pretty much.
Because the guy wants to be nice about it, but Elizabeth's gonna let you know.
Exactly. I said I wasn't cut out to be poor. How many times have you heard that?
See. Well, now, all right. Let me ask y'all a couple of questions. So, how long have y'all been together? Like officially, like a year or two, I think.
No, not even that long. Like we. Officially, I guess, started dating in October, but I've known Logan since 2011, and we've been friends. We've done horse deals.
Horse shows.
Yeah, horse shows, that kind of stuff.
And Logan, we talked about this the other day. Logan primarily does colt starting. Correct? And you do other, what all do exactly do you do besides just colt starting?
So I do like the reining cow horse and the cutting, reining, the ranch riding, pretty much all your, you know, your Western AQHA events, your NRCHA, and just getting into the NCHA a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's about the only thing I haven't really just full force went was NCHA, just straight cutting. You know, I've started colts since I was, you know, 14, 13.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No shit.
So, but that's how my horse deal got started. I've always loved horses ever since I was little.
Yeah.
You know, from, you know, little bitty going to the rodeo and chasing the calf around, trying to pull the ribbon off his tail. You know, always been kind of involved with it. And then, like I said, I guess I've always been on a horse, but 14, 15 was when I really got serious and, you know, said I want to be a horse trainer.
Yeah. Well, I knew you were already in reined cow horse. I knew that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you did. Because, you know, you have some people that just kind of take a horse from a colt starter and finish them out. You have people that just do colt starting, but you do it pretty much from start to finish. Like, you could start them and finish them.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that's pretty cool because you don't see that a lot.
Yeah, and but, you know, and it's trying to find them customers that'll stick with you long enough to do it, you know, because it's a process. It's not a 30-day
right.
miracle. Here we go, let's give it our best shot, which unfortunately to say I've done that before, and you know, and it's worked for me sometimes, but not every time,
right?
You know, but that's,
yeah,
the
you're on the horse's time, like can't nobody control
right.
that.
You know, some horses take, you know, they got their willing and ready to learn and work for you, and you can just, you know, it's a piece of cake. you know, and then others, they got their own time schedule, and, you know, if you push, they push back, and you just kind of got to find that happy medium to where, you know, you at least make progress every day. It might not be leaps and bounds, but it's progress. So when I first left North Carolina and worked for somebody other than my dad, the first place I went was to Pennsylvania, Clark Quarter Horses in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And so I worked for them for a while, started a bunch of two-year-olds for them. I think on my job interview, I started 8 colts. That was my job interview in one day. So. But
hold on. Whoa. You started 8 colts, horses that have never been touched in one day?
Yes, ma'am. And, but, you know, really, but they're really great people up there. And but they put on a colt, they had a colt starting competition they did in the summer.
Yeah.
And I was up there for a couple of years. And, you know, like I said, you know, so it was like the first day you're in the round pen, the second day you get like a half a day in the round pen, and the second half of the second day you have to take him through like an obstacle course, like a trail course. You know, so 2 days from this colt never being saddled, you're having to get him saddled and, you know, get him through a trail pattern. You know, that takes a bit.
Yeah.
And trying to do it without, you know, rushing and missing over steps and actually putting the foundation on them. And I'm kind of OCD when it comes to horses. Like, I have to, you know, I have my steps and I go through and I make sure and I double check. And so, you know, I'm not the quickest in the world by no means. But,
yeah. Well, I mean, it amazes me that people don't understand that you really don't want to rush a horse. I mean, you don't. You know, the more, it's like you have a ticking time bomb if you go and you rush a horse past, you know, what you should do or not. And to me, I just think you want them to be able to take your time with them. But you do get people that rush them like crazy.
You do, you know, because people, they'll go buy someone and they're like, I got big hopes and dreams and they want it like now. And I mean, I get it. You go, you know, you go spend $20,000-$30,000 on a prospect. You know, you want him to do good and you're wanting to get him out there and get him showed. And, you know, but you got to think of that horse too. What can that horse handle? What can, you know. You know, because that's the last thing you want is to be push, and you think you got him good, then you get in the middle of the show pen, and he gives you the tall finger and says, nope, not today, buddy. You know, that's, it happens a lot, but, you know, that's not what we want.
Right.
And, you know, especially for, like, the colts, you want to make sure they have that good foundation to where everything's a good experience.
Yeah.
You know, for everybody on down the line that, you know, has to, that takes that horse and, you know, because, and starting colts, you know, it ain't for everybody. You know, I know a lot of people, they can ride show horses, but they can't start colts. And then vice versa.
Yeah.
They're great colt starters, but a show horse is a little different ballgame. You know, it's just, and you have to learn to adapt and ride what's underneath you.
Yeah, because now Elizabeth, you grew up showing horses, showing pleasure horses and stuff, right?
Yes. So my dad, and when I call him my dad, is Jim Anderson, and he is a color breed judge. So that means he has his paint papers, his app papers, the Palomino card, like, and I think Buckskin, and maybe POA. So we had always had a big farm, and he's not my biological father. He was my mother's horse trainer, and when I was an infant, and then I was just put in here. And since I was a youth, I could ride and show all the horses. So they would put it as youth safe after I rode it and showed it, and then they would sell it. and then I basically came to live here. When I graduated high school, I called him and said, I need a place to go. And originally I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. and Jim originally had a farm in South Carolina and moved here to Mount Ulla, North Carolina, I think in like 98, I think is when they bought this place. So I came here in the summers and I just rode under him, and we always had three or four really big halter stallions, and we showed halter from like weanling to the aged, and then we had pleasure horses. We always had a couple of those and a couple of hunt feeders, and I was the one who rode.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And showed our futurity hunt seat horses. So mainly I did a lot of the color breed things instead of the quarters.
Which, you know, a lot of those are kind of tying in now these days. I'm sure you know the difference. Like from, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, it was like paint was separate from quarter horse. Like everybody was kind of separated. But now it's like.
Yeah, now everybody crosses over. Yeah. And I think they're trying to, like, I know a lot of the paint shows now, like, offer. I don't necessarily know like if they have the quarter horse stuff yet, but I know that everybody has like at least the NSBA stuff, and then they'll have the open classes where it doesn't matter what it is, so that whatever trainer that is mainly got quarter horses in his barn, but he has some people that are paint people or whatever, so they can haul those horses and at least get those young horses exposed to a show. That way it's a little more, I guess, cost effective for everybody, because if you've never had to really pay a good training show fee, some of these kids, you know, I was lucky growing up that I didn't have to pay a trainer. But then when I became an amateur on my own and I actually started getting help from other trainers, since my dad's like in his 70s and he can't always go to help me now, and he just can't take the heat and do things. So yeah, when you get that bill, it kind of hurts a little, for sure. So not being able to do things exactly on your own like you want to. So that's kind of been an eye-opener. So at least I have seen what it's like to be in the trainer's position, and you have that thought of your customer, and then I've also been the customer. And in horse training, you get those assholes, and that's what they...
I can't imagine as a horse trainer what y'all get asked. You got way more patience than I do.
And so that's why, you know, Logan is the professional and I still stay amateur. And it's funny because I don't do a thing that Logan does, like the whole cow horse thing. And I tried taking a, you know, at a friend's house going with a horse and going down the fence, and that was, I hardly even broke a lope, but it was too fast for me. I hated it. I didn't like it. It was not for me. And then on the other hand, taking Logan to ride pleasure horses has been, I think, an eye-opening experience for him as well. My trainer now, Steve and Jennifer Reams, that helped me, and I had a horse for this year for the maiden. And then I took my horse to a warm-up show, and somebody, you know, liked him. And a few weeks later, I sold him. So now I no longer have a horse to show this season. But I guess, you know, that's meant to be. But Steve has kind of taken Logan in on some of the pleasure horse stuff. And he rode kind of a, I would say, maybe a little bit more of a difficult two-year-old for Steve. So Steve at least gave him a chance, you know, to see what he could do, and he was really impressed with him. But, you know, I know pleasure horses is not really Logan's thing, but I guess as long as your colt's starting it and it's quiet, after that you can take it and do whatever you want. Just good colt starting, doesn't matter if it's a hunt seat horse, if it's a dressage horse, if it's a cow horse or pleasure horse, it has to have the basics anyway. Doesn't matter what you do with it after. So
So, Logan, you're going to venture into some of the pleasure world now?
Yes, ma'am.
Slowly but surely.
Like I said, I enjoy horses. So, I mean, if it's a pleasure horse, if it's cutters, reiners, cow horse, I prefer, you know, the cow horse and stuff, you know, because I come from a rough stock background. I rode rough stock for 9 years.
What does that exactly mean?
I rode bulls for 9 years.
Bulls is rough stock.
Yeah, so I rode bulls from junior high all the way to about 2010, 2011. And then the cow horse kind of filled that adrenaline rush void there.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when you're going down the fence, there's nothing like it. I love going down.
It does look pretty badass, actually. Like, for me, when I see those pictures of those horses going down the fence, like what you're talking about, Macau and all that stuff, I'm like, that's pretty cool. I mean, you're not going to get that thrilled on a pleasure horse, but
no,
not knocking a pleasure horse, but it's still, I mean, you got to have a talent to do any of them. You know, pleasure horses isn't less of a talent. It's just slower.
Right. And, I mean, you take the same, like Elizabeth said, you take the same, almost the same concept as, like, the reiners, you know, because you have to have them horses, you have to set them horses up in a certain position. So, to be able to set them horses up, them horses, you've got to be able to be broke. I mean, they got to be broke to, you know, when you ask to do what you're asking and not, you know, bulk you in here, you know. So, and that's why, like, you know, coming from the cow horse deals, you learn, you know, because you got to teach them horses to do three events, you know, cut, rein, you know, and then obviously go down the fence. And you got to think how much handle them horses actually have to have to take the pressure you're putting on them and to be able to put their bodies in the position they need to be in to get whatever maneuver done that you're asking them, and, you know, and be willing to do it. And that's a big part too, that they're willing to do it. You know, it feels like we're taking a year and a day to get around the pen. And
yeah, but I'll tell you though, when a pleasure horse comes undone because there's holes in the training, it's a lot worse than a cow horse coming undone.
She is right. She is right.
Right.
It's a lot worse.
Because so I'm actually glad you brought that up. Do you think that is because in pleasure, now I grew up pleasure, so I'm not knocking it, right? But but do you think that could be attributed to the fact that pleasure is not necessarily something, just like hunt feed, I guess, well, no, it's not necessarily something the horse was designed to do, whereas working with cows, it's more of a natural habitat. Do you think that's why?
So I think that really depends on breeding, because like if I showed you just like what's a hot bloodline right now, like maybe vital signs are good or one of those VS flatline horses, and you watch those weanlings in the pasture when they're trying to do the sale videos, those horses' heads, like, they hang low and they naturally sweep from the hock and they have the straight front leg. So I think maybe in my experience, because I showed, you know, in the early 2000s and stuff where maybe like the breeding wasn't where it needed to be yet, and there were still some old type bloodlines where they had more cow, because back in the day, like I showed Huntseat on a Gold Seeker bar mare. Like, today, you would not do that. You would get laughed at. You would look very funny. So I think it all comes down to the breeding. So I think where I have a hard time riding the type of horses Logan has is they're always thinking and looking ahead. And I'm used to riding a horse that, for lack of better ways of saying it, isn't thinking, and they're constantly just waiting on me to tell them what to do. Now, some people don't like that, and that is fine. But if you've, you know, had a scary horse accident or something bad has happened to you, you want to ride a horse that's going to wait on you, not one that, even though the cow horse isn't going to hurt you or anything like that, but it feels scary, I guess, if that makes sense.
I think pleasure, well, some people could argue that the pleasure, you know, discipline, just like barrel racing, is not necessarily something the horse is made to do. You know, you've got some people out there who say, you know, barrel racing is absolutely redundant. They should be doing it with horses. So,
right.
Yeah, but in comparison to something that's cow-related, it's like you can make that make a little more sense because it's like the horse has a job that it would naturally be able to do or has been used before naturally.
Right.
You know? And I think that helps your mentality a little bit, maybe.
It does because, you know, the pleasure horses and the hunt seat horses, and for like, I think in the rule book for like hunt seat horses, they say they want the rail to kind of, they want the rail horses to look like what a horse would look like if he was trotting or galloping through the field after the hounds, like, you know. And do our horses really look like that? No, they don't.
Right.
they just don't. But it's just like anything else, everybody has a thing that they like, and you cannot knock it till you try it. Now, a cutting horse, I like that. I didn't care about going down the fence. But a cutting horse was fun. It was in a shorter burst, and I felt more in control.
You got to do that? I'm jealous.
I know. So, I guess
it
all depends.
Stop! I have questions. Was it fun? Did you feel like you were going to fall off? Like, did you, you know?
No, I didn't. I practiced twice, and some friends of ours were in Georgia, and I said, I'm entering this cutting class. And my friend looked at me and said, you've never shown a cutting horse before. I said, yeah, I don't really care about that. I'm just going to go in here and do it. And was it like the best? Was it like write home, bring home a check? Absolutely not. But I didn't blow it completely. I didn't
right.
freak out. And it was fine. And I came in and I stayed on and all the tack was on the horse when I left. And it was fine. I had a great time. I don't know. I don't, you know.
That sounds like a winner to me.
And she showed the boxing some with me, where
yeah.
we come in and just box the cow.
Yeah, I had never done that before. Or, like, I guess it was a couple of, several years ago you called. It was before Easter. And there was a horse show, and you said, do you want to show boxing on this horse? And I was like, well, I've only just rode it in the arena for you. But, yeah, I don't even know what that is. So I ordered all this stuff because I don't have any Western clothes. I only have hunt seat clothes. So I ordered all these clothes, and I meet Logan at the horse show, and the mare is in raging heat, and he has a stallion, and I was just like, let's trade. I rode the horse, and he rode the mare down, and then I said, you keep her until it's time for me to show her. I said, I don't want to ride her. I'll get irritated with her attitude. It's going to bother me. So
yeah.
He did. He kept the horse, and I still
she
went in.
She could probably feel that you're feminine, too. She could probably know that, too.
I don't know. It was just awful. She's in raging heat. And we go in. It's my turn to go. So Logan and I trade horses, and he stands at the gate, and I was kind of like, I don't know what to do. And they let the one cow out. And
it was a five-minute coaching, maybe yeah. 5 minutes of coaching is all I give her.
I won the class.
Oh, my
and I
God.
Couldn't,
well, wait,
I couldn't believe
you
it.
You get 5 minutes to do the class, or you get
no.
5 minutes of coaching before?
No, he just explained it to me in 5 minutes of what I was supposed to do, and I followed his directions.
And
won.
You won it.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
So we all
That's
laughed
awesome.
About that. Was just like the funniest thing ever. And then a couple of times, like, he's called and said he's had some horses that he needed to get in the show pen. And I was just coming just to be supportive and help. And
yeah.
I, again, didn't have any show clothes. And so we borrowed show clothes that show. And it was my first, like, ranch riding class. And there was, like, a bunch of people. There was at least 20 or 25 head entered.
Mm-hmm.
And I won that. And I'd never practiced at all.
Yeah, I just
That's awesome,
that
though.
Here you go. Go show. But this is what you got to do.
You know, well, I've ridden horses behind many a trainers before, and I will tell you that's not normally how it goes. Like when you catch ride, you're like, well, let me spend hours riding this horse. I need to come to your farm beforehand. But I've always known that if Logan handed it to me, I knew it was not going to kill me. So I would always ride it without practicing.
Well, so do you think that it has been easy for you? This is actually perfect. Do you think it has been easy for you to go from a pleasure hunt seat background, straight into, the reined cow and cow horse stuff? Do you think it's an easy transition?
I have actually thought that. I think my biggest thing that I cannot let go is equitation. But actually getting out there and riding the horses and, you know, warming them up or just playing and just helping has definitely been easy. I don't have an issue with that. My thing is I overthink things because I've been trained that whenever you get ready for a pattern, this posture has to be this way and that way. And the way I sit on the horse, and he's like, you can't sit like that on a cow horse, you know, but I think that's been the hardest thing for me to let equitation go.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that we were taught that for aesthetic purposes versus where when you start getting into the cow classes, like what you're saying right now, that was more of to look good, whereas actual functionality requires you to be a lot different?
Learning to sit deep was the hardest thing.
You know, I've always ridden, like I said, I had the pleasure horses, but, you know, right before I did the pleasure horses, I showed Hunter jumpers. So, because they wanted me to learn, like, a good seat, so they sent me to a Hunter jumper trainer in Charleston, South Carolina, and I believe she still teaches to this day, Miss Cindy Simpson. But, you know, I had to jump courses, ride without stirrups. Sometimes if you were leaning too much and like these, I learned how to ride like in the George Morris days where kids would probably cry now. They used to loosen your girth a little bit and do stuff like that to make you sit in the center and, you know, jump, where today people be like, oh, that's cruel. But I'm thankful that I had that because I feel like otherwise I don't know, I wouldn't understand the cow horse or understand what they're looking for. And I still don't understand, like, the full point system and things like that. But, you know, I think that's something that just comes with, learning.
But physically, because of you having a horse background of any type, really, it's been pretty easy for you to go from pleasure to cow, because it can be kind of intimidating, you know, like what you just said.
Scary.
It can be a little, it's very intimidating.
Especially when you're not used to riding with the horse's head in up.
Right. That was about, so look, I did a little bit of sorting back in the day, and I went from pleasure horse to sorting. I went all the way to Virginia, I bought this sorting horse, and they kept trying to get me for the longest time to pull my hands up and let my horse's head come up. Oh. And I could not for the life of me get my head wrapped around it. Like, I just had that pleasure brain of your hands are down, they're not up. Like, the way you control the whole front end of the horse was just like, you know what I mean? It's a big difference.
It is. It's a very big difference. And so I think that has been the thing for me, because – you know, my horse may be bigger. Before we sold him, he was probably just under 17 hands or whatever. And, you know, Logan rode him a few times. And it is different. And it's different to trust your horse to throw the reins away.
Yes.
And put them on the rail and trust them that they're going to stay where they need to stay, too. So I just think being a good horse person in general is just trying just to be able to ride just anything, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I noticed too, you know, because, you know, the ranch, you can kind of, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but, you know, like, especially like lead changes and that kind of stuff, you know, you can kind of cover up some holes in your training. You know, you can guide a little harder, push a little harder, you know, when they go to change leads. And, you know, a lot of times it's hope and pray they change leads. But, you know, but then with the pleasure horses, like you said, it's the same thing, but we slow everything down. Well, it's just like anything. When you slow everything down, then you really...
It makes it harder.
Yeah, you have to focus on everything. And it really helped me learn, you know, because, like, I spent some time in Mississippi with Rob Huddleston, and I worked for him for a while, and, you know, we rode a lot. And, you know, every day when me and him was out there riding, you know, he had his string and I had my string. But it was always and I'm grateful for it, but it was like a quiz. Every day we were riding together, and, you know, we was bouncing ideas off each other. And, his big thing was, you know, you got to know where your horse's feet is and what are you feeling underneath you. And you'd be loping around there, and he'd be like, what foot's on the ground right now? Or where's your horse's feet? And, you know, and first week or two, I was like, one of the four, you know. But... And then once you learn the feel and learning where that horse's feet are, and then learning, you know, how that horse is put together and how he has to move to be able to put that foot here. And if this foot's here, he's able to do that. Or if that foot's there, it's enabling him to do this or that.
Customers who are new into this, or even just been in it, you know, 10 years or so still fairly new, of understanding that if they say, I want to go to the top of the top, well, for lack of better things to say, we can't just go to Mount Airy and buy you something that looks ranchy and you go do that.
Right.
You have to, if you're going to play at that league, and here's, I'll put my own story on the line here, the horse that I just sold. I was wanting to do the Virginia Maiden. I was wanting to go to Congress this year, and he is a three-year-old, and I paid a decent amount of money for him, and I've had 2 years in training invested in this horse, like lots of sleepless nights, lots of crying, like, are we going to make it? And the horse just mentally, he wasn't ready for what I was ready for. And so I was thankful that I have a trainer with Steve and, you know, Steve and Jennifer Reams, that he was very honest with me, and he was like, this is a great horse and this is going to be a good horse. He's just not going to be a maiden horse. And so if this is the thing that you're wanting to do with Futurity, then we need to get you another horse. And so taking that blow as a customer of, I've spent all this time, all this money, I've invested all of this, and to go, well, it's not going to make it. The customers just have to understand, you're not saying those things to them to make it, to belittle their horse or belittle anything. You're, in the long run, you're just trying to save them money.
Well, I mean, and you got to be able to trust what you're, trainer's saying. You got to be able to trust that, you know, and nobody can know what a horse is going to do until you get on it and do it.
Nope. You have to haul them, and they have to be hauled to the shows. Customers just have to understand that the pressure that sometimes they put on the trainer to make things happen and make things work, it's not good for the horse. It's not good for the trainer, and it's just not good. If the horse isn't ready, the horse is not ready.
Right.
And that's what I run into a lot was, you know, because I've had customers where I had a two-year-old that only had 60, 90 days, and we take it to an open show just to haul it, and I put it in a few classes, and we end up, you know, like, it was a little open show close to the house, and I had two two-year-olds there, and the one two-year-old was first in every class I put her in. I think we showed five or six times, and then the other two-year-old, we was consistently third and fourth in every class we put her in, you know. But that was at the open show. Now, if I'd have took her to, like, Memphis and tried to show her, we'd have probably got it handed to us.
Right.
But a lot of the people, a lot of people, some people think that, well, we done good here, we can go do good there, and it's not the case. You know, that we, and I don't want to say we got lucky, but, you know, them colts, they, you know, they kept their mind about them, and, you know, they rode like they were supposed to, but, you know, when you go to them, like, so Memphis, Tennessee, they have a show. It's a NRCHA, AQHA, APHA. I mean, it's
big.
Cow horse train and ranch. Yeah. So, you know, and there could be 200 horses there in a weekend. You know,
wow.
And there's two different arenas going on, and with all the cattle in and out, you know, there's tractor trailers rolling in and out, bringing cattle, swapping cattle. So, you know, there's a lot going on. And, you know, I've hauled horses there the first time, and you pull them off the trailer, the head goes up, they start snorting, and you're like, well, here we go. You know, and they wasn't ready. And that was, you know, and that was some hard lessons I had learned to where, you know, they need to get out and get exposed before, you know. And like I said, and like Elizabeth said, you're trying to save your customer's money and time, and, you know, our time. Like, it's not going to do no good for us to go in and try to show that horse, and then they have a bad experience in the show pen, and then, well, right there's 3 or 4 months of problem fixing you have to do.
Right.
To get them over that, you know, to where if we just kind of tuck them, let them, ease them around, rolled them around, you know, not showed them, but let them go and see. You know, yeah, you had to pay the stalls and the shavings and the haul bill, but, you know, you just saved $1,200-$1,300 entry fees. You know,
Jesus Christ,
and then,
how much it costs to show now?
You would die if you'd seen some of my bills.
So, and then, but then when that horse has been seasoned and ready to go, now when you go get in the show pen, it's not, well, I hope we do good. Now you can be confident and be competitive.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense what you're saying, because, I mean, if you take the investment seriously initially in the horse and in the training, and then it's going to take you a little further in the long run than if you wait until later on. You know, if you take the time to look into what you're breeding, what you're getting, where it's coming from, and that kind of stuff, you don't have to worry so much, whereas like what, you know, Elizabeth said, thinking you can just go to some auction and just pick up a horse anywhere else, like, you're going to end up with problems.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not to be mean, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you just won't end up fitting in. And so when you want to step up your game, I mean, that's disheartening, because it costs this as much to keep the $500 horse as it does the $30,000 horse. I mean, so people, you know, you just really getting into it, you really just need to decide what level you're
yeah.
going to be at and where
yeah.
you can afford to be at. And a lot of times, I'm not going to lie, because I love this, I eat, sleep, and breathe it, I will do things that a lot of times it financially is stupid. Really, really, really stupid. but, you know, I love this. I don't do anything
right.
else. I don't have
yeah.
anything else, I guess, if that makes sense. So I spend
well,
it on,
well, I mean,
on my horse.
Look, you have levels and money. Just like, I mean, there's, you could take, this is like this in any industry. You got people that do it with cars. You got people that do it with boats. You got people that do it with everything, you know. So it's not, you know,
yeah.
of course people aren't necessarily different and special because we do that. But you are right when you say, the amount of money that you want to invest in it is going to determine how far you want to go. Like, you know, it's not, it used to not be that way, actually,
it wasn't. And I remember that in the early 90s, you know, it really wasn't that bad. But when you're talking about how much it costs today to go to a horse show, if, you know, if you're not a savvy amateur do-it-yourself and you have to pay for a trainer, I mean, I hate to say it, you might need to be friends with the cartel or whatever to afford to be able to do it. Because I'm just going to tell you,
we talk about we's wanting to get, you know, she's wanting to get a cutting horse and wanting to do this and that. And I was like, well, that's fine, but achieve your first goals, like, you know, and that I guess we both are, we're goal oriented. Like, we set goals and that's what we go for.
But I think it works too, because,
and I'm a road warrior, so I don't mind burning up the road either, so.
But he doesn't do the Huntsie or the pleasure horse or really any of that stuff, so he can actually help me when it's my turn, and you know, he could help my trainer, whatever, and it's not stressful. So his attention is just on, am I ready? And then at his stuff, I'm not showing it and I'm not doing it, so I can help do whatever. It's not stressful for me. Sometimes things are not scheduled appropriately. Like, I can never in my life understand why we're going to have a junior hunter under saddle class or a three-year-old hunter under saddle class at 8 o'clock in the morning when it's 40 degrees. I don't understand why associations do that, because, hold up. I didn't know you showed Georgia Ranch. We sponsor them. We've done some work for them. They're a great show. That was the first cutting thing that I did, and I had a blast. It was just different, the way, like, trying to figure out the scheduling, and it was kind of like everything was show at will, and I was very confused. I had never done any of that before.
What do you mean show at will? What do you mean?
Yeah, the classes were, they just had like the patterns and stuff set up, and whenever it was you signed up to go, they would just call your name. So like, I'm used to, like, so APHA, for example, in the morning you have halter, then you have showmanship, then you have after lunch break, you have the hunt seat classes, and then the next day it's the trail and the cow horse stuff or whatever. So when I went to the ranch, so they just had different patterns set up here and set up over there. So it wasn't like, it was like if you had if you showed in a cutting class or something, then it was just easy for you whenever it was convenient for you. You told the lady you're here to show your pattern, and you went and showed the pattern.
I didn't know this.
I
thought it was like what me and you are. You just go down the like you hear, the show starts at 8 a.m. This is the first class, second class,
exactly.
Third class.
Well, they
it's not like that. No.
Well,
I did not know this.
Yeah. So they'll have like at 8 o'clock they're starting herd work, and then after herd work it's the boxing, da 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 da. But then in between them they'll have them at wheel classes. So let's say you're first in the boxing, or first in the herd work, last in the boxing, so you might have 3 hours to kill. You can ride over and go do a trail class at wheel. Like, say, hey, I got time, so I'm going to go get my trail class knocked out.
Yeah. And my friend Michelle, that she went with me and had one of her horses there, and we were looking at each other like, this is so weird. I don't know what to do. You know, and then even coming from, like, even, like, when, because I've done a little bit of everything, even showing dressage horses. Now, when you sign up, like, months in advance for your dressage class, and you know what test you're going to take, and they have you scheduled, and they will say you will be in the ring at 10:15, and at 10:15, guess who's in the ring? You. So there is no hurry up and wait with dressage. I love that.
I had a feeling about it. I've never shown dressage, but I feel like you're very right. When, I mean, I could foresee that. Like, it needs to be very, there's no, it's very organized.
It is. And, I mean, the first time I rode off pattern, the judge was sitting in a car in the AC at the end of the arena and honked the horn at me. He's like, get off the stage.
Are you serious? That's crazy.
So, you know, like, it's just funny how each discipline has, you know, has something. And I think I was telling Logan a long time ago, probably 2006, I had gone to, like, the Frisian World Show.
Bet that was fun.
It was. And I was like, those people are on a different level, because the barns, they had butlers in the barns. So, like, each, like, stable that was there showing, and they had a whole buffet set up and everything in their cards, and they were handing out champagne and wine and stuff, and I was like, man, this makes like what we look like. Yeah. So, you know, I think at every association, I think I would encourage everyone who's into horses to go out and see it all. Don't just say you just hate something or whatever, because you don't, you just don't know what you'll like. So I just, I would
see
say
it at different levels.
Yeah,
for sure. Because, you know, you see, like I said, you know, pleasure at the local level, then pleasure at like the world show level. It's a whole
right.
different
or Congress
thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or like
I, some of them, I look at them and I'm like, y'all are beyond me. Like, y'all are way beyond me. I would never even, you know, dream of being able to, you know, do some of the classes and stuff that you do. I'm just your average little weekend open show.
And you know what? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because I've had the most fun with that. And, you know, I didn't have to buy a $7,000 jacket either just to fit in.
I saw that. I saw some of the prices. I'll never forget it. This was used for $3,500. I said, are you shitting me right now?
I know. And, you know, back in the day when they didn't really have a lot of clothes, like, and I don't know if you remember it, there was like a catalog called like Sargent's Catalog, and that was like the premier.
Oh, yeah, and Hobby Horse.
Yeah, and so that's where you had to get your stuff. And so we didn't have a lot of money, you know, horse trainer parents. So we would go to consignment shops, and I think you would laugh at this, but like little, my mom would call it, she's like, you need to look for the little old lady dinner jackets. It's like the thrift shops and consignment shops. And there was one in Charleston called like Consigning Women, and it was, and it had like these big gaudy like jewels on it, like big 80s shoulder pads. And she would get those jackets and she would tear them down and add more stones to it or whatever. And that's what I wore.
Yeah.
And
well,
I had
you
a
make
McClellan.
Me feel a lot better.
And I had a McClellan saddle, which, you know, wasn't a Harris, but I mean, a McClellan's still nice. And also this, you'll laugh at this, like we would buy our own stones and she would take paper plates and have me cut designs out and put the stones on and then glue earring backs on them so that you would have big earrings back then.
You probably remember the Rosettas. Did you wear those?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. They would gawk at that now. Like, that was the thing back then was Rosettas. And we, you just made me feel better because we, my grandma used to take tuxedo shirts and paint them.
Had that too, girl. I had it too.
She would paint on them, and that was like our show clothes that we had because, I mean, it was so expensive to have, you know, the chaps. We had to have the chaps and then the hat and that kind of stuff like that. But my grandma helped. She made so much of our show clothes, it wasn't even funny. And then those nets, you remember having the hair nets?
Oh, the hair nets with,
with the little ribbon,
bow.
With the little ribbon clips on the back. That's how we used to do our hair.
Exactly. Exactly. And I would get my hair braided. My mom would do it so tight that I would be crying sitting in the tack stall. On the
oh,
tack
my gosh.
She's like, quit crying in the hairspray.
So glad I'm a boy.
But, what did he say?
He said, so glad I'm a boy.
Right. Hey, horse girls are tough, and this is why we are tough.
Yep. You can survive that hair braid.
Yeah, or heat stroke. I almost had a heat stroke once. I mean, because, you know, we were showing in the summertime, 90, 100 degrees outside. You had black suede chaps. And hat and jacket and all this horse hair and sweat and stuff. And they had to call the ambulance once on me because they thought I was going to die.
Yeah, the hunters weren't any different because back in the day, like, you wore a wool coat. There wasn't, like, all these coat choices that they have now. It was a wool coat. And I believe I passed out at the Seabrook Summer Classic because we used to show at a jumper show on the beach on Seabrook Island. And it's hot. It is hot. And, you know, when you show hunters, you have your equitation round, you have your hunter round, and then, you know, you show on the rail. So you have to make it through two jump courses and one flat class.
Yeah.
And it was
I remember back then
to take your coat off.
Yeah, you used to it was like a luxury if they excused jackets for hunting.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a luxury, which was far and few between, because I remember, you know, I did Western and my friend did English, and be like, we don't have to wear our jackets. Be like, oh. But hey, it made us tough. Not tough enough for cows, but it made us tough. Then Logan went and threw cows in it, and
yeah.
Now look at you.
Go buy me a pair of lace-ups.
Yeah, you wore those for a little while.
Yeah, I had me a pair of lace-ups. And then,
those used to be cool.
They say they're coming back, so
they got to at some point. Those were the thing to wear, man. Lace-ups were the thing to wear. And I remember talking about it on another podcast. We had these silver pieces that you put on the little tassels of the tongue.
Yeah.
I had those, too. See? Those lace-ups were the coolest things. They were the cool things to wear. Not now. You don't see nobody
wearing that. You had the colored Wranglers, like the Easter egg color one.
Yeah.
And I tried to buy a pair of Rockies. Like, used pair of Rockies. Those things are, like, $110, like, used. Isn't that crazy?
Really?
Yeah.
We should have kept ours.
I know.
Could have got some money for that.
I know.
So. It's so cool, though, to just kind of see, like, how much it changes and goes up and down and just... It's crazy just to see how much it's changed, you know, because horses was not the cool thing, and now it's the cool thing, which is cool. But
I know.
I'm glad your leg's doing better, though, Logan. Sorry about your leg.
I know. In school, I was, you know, the, like, crazy horse girl, and they called me a redneck and all this stuff like that because my mom and dad would come through the school line on Friday with the horse trailer hook.
And now they're what cool kids do.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thank you, Yellowstone.
Yeah, I know, right? Which I don't think that's gonna come back on the air. I think it's done now because I know that Taylor Sheraton, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, is suing Cole. I do know that.
Who knows? I know when we were in Texas, we got to sit. What was the restaurant that we went to? Is it Cattleman's?
Mm-hmm.
We ate at Cattleman's at the Stockyards. And this older couple comes in. And when I mean older, they were 70s, 80s. And this woman comes out. And she clears the way for him to come in. And we're sitting in this little booth. And they actually sat at the booth across from us because we were in this room kind of by ourselves. And then they come and join in, and you could tell this man looked like somebody because this woman comes out like a manager, and she's like, we have your special wine from the basement. And so Logan and I are looking at each other like, who is this guy? He must be some big Texan.
And they're talking about swapping emails and this and that.
Yeah, and then she said, and then the guy looks and he goes, Taylor Sheridan, I don't like this butter. This is terrible butter. And he's like, I told him that the last time I saw him. So I guess he bought Cattleman's as well.
Yeah, Taylor bought
Cattleman's. And the Drover Hotel and stuff like that. But it was a really interesting
That is interesting. If he said it about the butter.
He's like, this is awful butter. But
so me, I
Logan really couldn't be quiet. He had to talk to him.
Did you find out his name or anything? Like, did you find out who he was, or is he special or not? Or is he just talking about butter?
No, he's pretty special. He's a financial advisor, and he owns three or four other businesses. And I mean, we kind of got some hard life lessons in that booth that night. And
he looked at Logan and said, "You need to do what you love. And you will never be poor." That is what he said.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He said, you know, he had started some jobs.
That just hit me in the gut.
He said, you know, he had started some jobs because, you know, they'd be good money. And he said he was working a lot and he was making decent money. And then he wasn't even, what was a hobby, turned into his full-time job, and he said, man, my income tripled.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you know, now I'm having fun, and he's like, I still own three businesses, but, and then he had bought a bunch of property and made it like a, the wedding venues, and his daughter runs it, and, you know, but, you know, just the, but, and then some other things, you know, he told us about, you know, he's big in the face and, you know, keeping all that, and, you know, it's just kind of, it grounded you and made you think again, you know, because the way this world is, you get pulled 1,000 different directions, and you're trying to please this person, please that person, and we forget about ourselves.
Well, and you just made me think about something. Me and Elizabeth messaged on this earlier about how people can drain the hell out of you, too. And situations can drain the hell out of you, and they can really put you, because, I mean, I've been tested here in the past year, and I even talked to another girl who's in Raincal the other week, and she said it, too. She was like, I was just around people that made me hate it. I absolutely hated it. I didn't want nothing to do with it. And you have to step back sometimes, and it'll make you question humanity. It'll make you question people.
A lot of it's, you know, how you look at it. Well, you know, you can stay down, or you can make it feed that fire where you come back hungrier. You know, like, so I got a goal. Like, my goal was to show in all three fraternities, the cutting fraternity, the reigning fraternity, and cow horse fraternity, and make the finals. Like, I don't want to win it. I mean, I'd love to win it.
Right.
But my goal was just to go to all three fraternities and make the finals. You know, and I kept thinking before, well, you know, I got to find that customer. I got to find that customer. Well, okay, well, well, if I don't find a customer and I just go by the prospect myself, and, you know, it's kind of like how, you know, Nick Dower's done it. You know, he, at Diamond's Horse, you know, he went, bought him as a prospect. He made that prospect himself. He went and showed him one, and, you know, look where Nick Dower's is today. But he done it himself. He didn't rely on somebody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, his goal never changed, but, you know, he got the prospect, he showed the prospect, he won. It's just, you know, so the goal was the same. It's just, you know, how you go about getting that goal might change. Like I said, you know, like I was looking for a customer. Well, maybe I should just be looking to myself. You know, like, I never really wanted to be one, like, the big numbers game. Like, I understand, yeah, you know, it takes the numbers to find them great horses, but...
But 40 head of horses, that's hard to do all of your customers justice. But those guys out there in Texas, they do that, and they have a lot of help to do that, and I give it to them on how they keep up with what they're doing. But you just, it's like the guy in Cattleman said, he said, on your ride home, because we were coming back to North Carolina, and I flew there, and then we drove back. And he's like, so I suggest you're going to have some hard thinking. He said, turn off your phone, turn off the radio, and just sit in silence and really search yourself for what you're going to do and what you really want.
And I made it from Fort Worth to Asheville until she made me take a nap.
Hey, that will make you think, though. You'll get to thinking, going, road thinking's good thinking.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Clinton Anderson says the best time he does is brainstorming and really business thinking is on the road. And that's how I've, you know, you're always, like, I always keep a pen and notepad beside me in the truck. Because nine times out of ten, when something, an idea hits me, I'm riding down the road, I'm listening to a podcast or, you know, something like that. Like, I'm always big on podcasts, you know, Cow Horse Full Contact, you know, always listening to them. You know, the Clinton Anderson, the Wealthy Cowboy, you know, all that stuff, you know. Always trying to better myself, you know. And I think that's a big part of this whole thing, is always trying to better yourself. You know, no matter what happens, get better. You know, you can play the victim, or it is what it is, and go on and get better. That's just kind of the attitude I've had about life here lately, is, it is what it is, and we're going to get better. And, you know, if it me riding pleasure horses, okay, I'm going to go be the best I can be at riding pleasure horses. If he trying to train a hunt seat horse, I'm going to be the best I can be training a hunt seat horse, reiners, cutters, whatever it is. I'm going to be the best I can be at it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. If somebody sends me something, I mean, I guarantee I'm going to give you 110%. Whatever your goals is, that's what we're going to shoot for.
Some people just don't think of, like, you know, I'm with Logan a lot of the time, so... And then also having a father that's a horse trainer. A customer's horse is always on the trainer's mind. They're always thinking about this or something they could do better or something to make it work. Or, you know, this isn't just a, well, he clocked in at 8 and he's going to clock out at 5 and he's not going to think about it again. It comes up at dinner. It comes up in the middle of the night. It comes up where... We're just in the grocery store and he says something about it, you know. So people need to realize that a lot of these horse trainers, it's their life and they love it and they're not just doing it just to make money.
No, I mean, horse training was not looked at as a really lucrative way of making money back in the day. It maybe is more now, but, you know. She's right. I mean, unless you have a lot of other things coming in, it's hard to keep that at a good level. And you guys have a lot of pressure as far as the customer, you know, to, and you're taking care of your customer's baby, pretty much.
Yeah. And, you know, we try to, you know, you try to accommodate, but, you know, but coming in and feeding treats and this and that ain't always the answer, but and that's
right.
Hard to explain to a lot of people too sometimes. Well, he's just my baby. Yeah, well, you wonder why you sent him to me, because he's biting, but yet you're sitting here feeding him treats 3 hours
right.
out of the day out of your hand, and then when he runs out of treats, he gets pushy, and then you're like, well, okay, and you just walk out and don't fix the problem. Well, you know, but... That's
that asshole. We just went over this, Logan. The asshole.
That should be a slogan. I should make that. Like, I think I could sell a lot of that stuff for trainers. I really think we just
could put it on a hat.
Yes, we can do that, and we could brand it.
You need to make hats that say, I'm an asshole, and you need to make one that says, I'm an asshole, and one that says, I'm not an asshole.
One says I'm an asshole, the other says I have the answer. No.
Yes. Right. What are you saying? That's perfect. But hey, I mean, you wouldn't. It's just like with lawyers and other things. You know, you need people to do dumb stuff so you can have a job.
But also, that lawyer isn't going to do anything for free. So, like,
right.
A lot of these people ask Logan for help. Just. For free. And I'm like, I guess where I get on my soapbox is I'm like, if he's your friend and you care about him and you want to see him succeed, then there's a, like, you should support your bit, like your, and I guess you experienced that with, like, your business.
Like I wouldn't ask for a free hat just because me and you are friends.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand. Let me tell you something. I used to have a group of girls that hung out with me for my boutique and stuff. And I paid for photo shoots. I gave them free clothes, all kinds of stuff all the time for shout outs, for this and for that. And I never really made a lot of money doing it. That's what nobody seems to understand. I didn't make a lot of money doing it. I didn't start making money until I got away from those people.
Yeah.
So you're going to go through a period of time where you're going to really find out who your friends are, and don't be surprised. Because
we're in it.
We're in it. Keep driving through it. Because let me tell you, I don't want to say I was shocked, because you always have a feeling. Come on now. You know, we're not dumb. You always got a feeling like, okay, you're not really my friend. If I push you to it, you're not going to pay me. And you just got to let that go. You got to let it go.
I get that for this customer. I said, but, you know, this customer is not valuing what you're doing. And then also, when the horse comes undone, you're being seen on a horse that's coming undone, and they think that that other people think that that is a product of what you put out.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. And so I think once I said it that way, and then a couple other of the mentors have, you know, said things, and I think it makes sense, because sometimes when you get into it and you're so eager and you're like, oh, I'm going to ride this and I'm going to ride that and I'm going to ride that. Well, no, we kind of have to start being picky about what comes into the barn and what we represent. And it's not that, you know, we're mean or we're being ugly or we're snooty or I'm snooty or whatever. That's not the case. It's just, that's not the level that we would want to present our business doing. If that's
perfect.
And so people don't understand that. And I'm like, and I would say, you know, this horse isn't what we're looking for. And if you want to be a part of the team, we'll be happy to either A, help you find a horse, or I will put you in touch with somebody if you don't necessarily want to use our service to find your horse. We'll find somebody who you trust that you could find a horse, and then, you know, we'll go from there. But people don't realize that we're trying to save them a lot of heartache and a lot of money.
Some people can take offense. You're right. No. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes.
A lot of people can take offense, and a lot of people, well, that's their first thing, is to get offended, because I had this lady want me to redo her logo about 3 or 4 years ago, and it was right around Christmas time. I'll never forget it. And I told her, out of the courtesy of, I mean, and respect, I said, hey, I can't get to this. You need to go somewhere else. It's not that
right.
I don't want to do it or I can't do it, but right now I know you need it and I can't service you. So out of respect, of course, she got mad and ran her mouth and got pissed
right,
off at
sure.
me for it. But I understand what you're saying, because it's hard to, even though we're saying the right thing and we've got a right mind behind us, something you can't control how somebody takes it.
You can't. And, you know, his business is not my business, but first and foremost, like, I'm his friend, so I actually want to see him do well and succeed. So, you know.
I love everything you're talking about.
I think it's great. I have to say it because I mean, and thankfully, like, I have the experience in the business. Like I said, I've been doing the business side of it with my dad and my family. I mean, we wouldn't be sitting on a $2 million farm if it wasn't for that.
Right.
I mean.
Right. Somebody's doing something right.
Yeah. I mean, he's got an indoor arena, outdoor arena, 25-plus stall barn. Like, everything's heat, hot water. Like, that. You don't just have that from somebody who doesn't know what they're doing as business. And, you know, growing up, we've had a lot of people storm out of here and this and that, and, you know, but that's, you can't make everyone happy. But the biggest thing that I can say to people like that is that if you're not happy, this is what is offered. If you don't like that, if I don't know somebody who can make you happy, I'm sorry. We'll try to help you any way we can. But definitely, it sounds, you know, to somebody who's wanting just to make money and try to make it, you have to learn how to also pick out your customers on who's going to work for you and your barn, and be a happy barn family and not cause drama. Because then also, when you get a bunch of women in the barn,
too many hens.
Yes.
I mean, it's a team effort. I mean, it's all a team effort. So, you know,
well,
you
she's right, though. If you get too many hens around, it can hurt you more than it helps
you. It's ugly. Quick.
That's the thing. Everybody's got to be on the same part.
Not like you wasn't going to, because your trainer is your better half. You know, you guys are so.
But you know, what I'm trying to say, I guess, is that I can understand, you know, it's hard sometimes to set those boundaries and say those things that you know need to be said, because you don't want to upset the customer, and you know, you do, when you work for yourself, you need every penny you can get. So, especially when you're starting off, or, you know, have to rebuild and all that kind of stuff. So, I understand. I kind of know, you know, how that feels, because I mean, my dad worked for himself his entire life, and grandpa did too, and they'll tell you they're really big on don't lower your prices, and don't you know, do you have to shut this off at this point in time, you have to do it like this, like, you know, I'm gonna listen to what's worked. So
yeah, I mean, and like I said, having business times, and like you know, Steve and Jennifer, when I did send my horse to get, you know, completely finished, and what I was, I guess where I was going with the whole quarter horse thing was I didn't have any contacts in the quarter horse world so much, and trying to find someone who will help you, they snubbed me for sure. A couple of barns that I called, and then I ended up making friends with Michelle Mize, and she's been really great. I was able to keep my horse with her for a little bit, and we rode together, and she ended up putting my name out there to help me find a quarter horse trainer to help me get my horse where I wanted to go, because let's face it, like, quarter horse world, that is tough. That is tough. And where I was wanting to go, I knew I couldn't go by myself and get anywhere. So she introduced me to, like I said, Steve and Jennifer Reams. But I had gone to some barns and asked for help and whatever. And it was amazing to me, because it was kind of like COVID time. So you're like, really, how much money are these people making to just turn my business away? And I mean, you're talking training like $1,200, $1,300 a month.
Jesus Christ.
Is what my training bills are, is what these guys are charging.
That's just basic training.
And that's just basic training. That's not taking my horse anywhere or doing anything else. So I was baffled, and it hurt my feelings, because I was like, I have this really nice horse, and nobody in the quarter horse world wants to help me. But it's like kind of like how Logan was saying, like, when you're in it and everybody's your friend, and then you step out for whatever reason that you're taking a break or just need to regroup, and then you come back and they just act like. And that's one thing I don't understand about our industry, is that there's room for everybody. So from the top to the bottom. So
it is,
you know,
very clicky. Horses is very clicky.
Yes, but I wouldn't have gotten help with a horse had it not been somebody for vouching for me.
Right.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, you're right, though, because, I mean, it's like that. Like, people will snub you. It's not, I mean, you know, they talk about how ranch class events are more friendly than pleasure. I don't think people quite understand how unfriendly pleasure and snaffle bit or hunt seat events
they
can
are.
Be. And it's not to say anything bad about the people in them. It's just that's the atmosphere. Like, you don't just walk in and people are like, hey, how you doing? Nice to see you. Like, it's not very friendly.
It was hard. It was hard.
Yeah.
Was
hard. Yeah.
And that's like the first year I showed, you know, I kind of didn't really have any help. Just kind of learning as we went, and, you know, I was out there a lot. You know, I think the first year, if I could complete a pattern and didn't get a zero, I mean, I was tickled to death. I didn't care if I scored a 60. As long as I got a score, I was happy. But I was watching them other boys ride, you know, the other trainers, and, you know, hey, how you doing? That's about all I'd get. And then finally, you know, I was like, you know, I need to get better. And finally, I started going up to people, and I, you know, and I'm one of them that, you know, I can talk.
Logan knows no stranger.
And and I'm also one of them, if you don't want to talk to me, I will make you talk to me.
Right.
And, you know, but like Chris Rice, you know, he was, you know, right here when I first got started, Chris was riding a lot. Like, we'd go to the same horse shows, and Chris helped me a bunch, you know. But, I mean, I had to make the initial effort, you know. Like, he'd seen me. And I walked up and asked him a question, but, hey, did you see? He's like, yeah, I seen your run. You know, like, they were watching. You just got to put forth the effort. But, and I mean, I know it's a little different than what Liz was saying, but like I went up and I have a little different approach than most people, but, you know, but like I said, then I went in and, you know, Chris started helping me. And like I said, Chris has helped me a lot, in the horse show deal. And it's the same thing, like when I was, like I told you, you know, Dad would just throw me up on them two-year-olds and I'd just have to hold on and he'd lunge me till they finally quit bucking. And then, all right, here, they're good to go, and hand me the reins. And then three steps later, we're bucking again. You know, because I didn't know no better. You know, and then that's, you know, and then luckily, you know, W.A. Jenkins, he ain't very far. You know, he was a big help with my colt starting. Like, I'd go up there and just, and I wasn't riding a whole lot. Like, I never, like, really rode for W.A., but he would let me come up there and I'd just watch. Like, I'd bring me a drink and a pack of crackers, and, you know, I was young. Like, I didn't have my driver's license. Dad would drop me off in the mornings, and I'd just find my little corner, and I'd go up there and sit, and I'd just watch him work courses all day. You know, and that's how I, you know, I learned a lot of the colt starting stuff was just sitting up there and watching. And I'd ask questions, but,
right,
you know.
And I think you did soak up a lot doing, being able to do that, like not having nobody talk, have nothing, like just can kind of learn on your own little, that's,
you know, just like horses, every horse learns at a different speed, different time frame.
Yeah.
But, you know, but like I said, all that really helped put the light on. But like I said, it wouldn't have happened, if I hadn't have picked up the phone and called and just, you know, I mean, I put myself out there, I guess you could say, you know, but, and like I said, it was, and like for, like I know there's like a bunch of young trainers coming up and, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help and go, like, you know, don't be afraid, just walk up and ask, I guess would be the question, is what I'm trying to say, but.
Yeah. I would rather get a no or be ignored, which I've been ignored so many times in my life, it's not even funny. I would rather know that I tried than not tried, like even in business now with me. There's so many people out there with messages from me that they didn't even respond. But at least I put it out there and put it in somebody else's ball court, you know, like I, like, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Or are you interested in this? Or you saw this and da, 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 da. And even, you know, y'all seen people clowning about it, but I'm the one that's hustling. So, right. That's the way that I look at it. You know, like what Logan just said, if you don't ask, you're never going to know.
Like I probably called 20 trainers a day. Hey, can I come ride with you? You know, hey, do you have time? Can I come? Just spend time with you, not, you know, yeah. Not really asking for a job. I mean, some of them I was asking for jobs, but, you know. But a lot of it was just go and ride and just, like I said, with them upper-level trainers, you know, because it's, you know, who you hang around is who you become. You know, that's what we've always heard, you know. Like in school, if you got in trouble or whatever, it's always guilty by association. So.
Yeah.
You know, it's who you're around. So, you know, if that's who you want to be, then go be with them people. Be around people. See how they do things, how they conduct themselves, how they conduct their business. You know, that's what, you know, we're shooting for now. I mean, it helped me realize how much I needed to work on as a trainer and a person.
It'll humble you, and it'll also... For me, it's humbled me and it's made me feel better. You know, like I like what you're saying, like, you know, if you set yourself around other people or kind of just in a different area and you can see somebody, oh, go, okay, I need to do it like that. Or, oh, I've been doing it right. Or, oh, you know, I've been doing it wrong. Like, you know, it's good for the soul to be able to do like what you're saying and put yourself with those people that you want to be like, or not necessarily want to be like, but you know what I'm saying. Say the same thing you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and it just makes you hungrier for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like me, it's showing horses. So I'm like, well, you know, that just kicked me in gear. Like, well, look, we got to get this going, you know, because, you know, I want to show up. And if I show up and nobody knows me, that's okay. But when I leave, they're going to know who I am. I mean, that's kind of my mentality. That's what. that's what, you know, drives me. Like, you know, if I show up and nobody knows who I am, that's fine. But when I leave, you know, and leave with a check, you know, that's my mentality.
They don't know who was here.
Right. You know, and like, you know, and my horse has done good, and, you know, my horsemanship, you know, like, I mean, that's every horse trainer. You know, somebody says Logan Brown, yeah, that's a horseman. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's our goal, or my goal.
Yeah.
And the rest of it's just icing on the cake. Because if you improve your horsemanship, then your horses improve. And that's what, you know, I guess that's what I ramble about. But, and like, you can ask anybody that's ever took a lesson from me. I get deep into it sometimes, and I break everything really down, but that's what, I, you know.
He'll have a novice rider going, huh? And you have to kind of, say, like, do like a little back off signal, because I'm like, they don't understand what you're saying.
But I'm just trying to get the horsemanship part through.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you'll never meet anybody as dedicated as Logan, but he can, and he will make it where if a person does not have.
I'll explain something 100 different ways until it sticks. I mean, that's just how I will find 100 different examples of 100 different ways of saying something, because I want you to understand, so A, you and your horse improve.
Right. Yeah.
And it might take me 30 minutes to do it, but.
There's only been a few times that he's given up and asked me to do it.
Oh.
Well, this is why y'all make a good team, because, I mean, that's what, going back to when we first got on the phone.
This is a good thing that you have your background and he's got his background. You guys are, like, going to be a power couple, to a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.